Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Welcome back to the local edition. And we have a big show for you today, so let's get straight to it. The federal government cut off billions in funding for social services and family assistance programs in New York, which is many officials say will affect hit children and social services hard. In the second half of the show, we'll talk to Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal. He will let us know how this is affecting Ulster County. But first, let's replay what happened this morning on Radio Chatskill. Dan Hoos, Sullivan County Communications Director, was on Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno talking about just this and how this will affect Sullivan County.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has frozen access to more than $10 billion in federal child care and family assistance funds for five states: California, Colorado, Illinois, Minnesota, and New York, coincidentally all governed by Democrats. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services cites concerns about widespread fraud or misuse of taxpayer dollars. Now, this just happened this week. We've been getting some reaction, including from Sullivan County Chair Nadia Reich. We got the Ulster County Executive weighing in on this. Can you tell us a little bit more about what this impacts, this freeze impacts for families?
Yeah, our Health and Human Services Commissioner John Little was kind enough to provide me with this really cool cheat sheet on what it is that these programs fund, because I'm sure there are many of our listeners, myself included, that have been fortunate enough not to need these kinds of services, but plenty of people do in Sullivan County and around the nation. The first one's the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or we call it TANF, T-A-N-F. It's a federal block grant that's meant to provide flexible funding to help low-income families achieve economic stability. So there's actually direct monthly cash support through, I think, those EBT cards to help pay for basics like housing, food, utilities, other essential needs. There's childcare subsidies so that parents can actually work instead of having to stay home to take care of their kids. There's employment and workforce supports like job training, education, transportation assistance, and other supports to help people find and keep employment. There is a flexible fund for family services that can be used for wage supplements, counseling, family support services. There's emergency and crisis support. This helps families facing urgent needs due to crises, usually one-time cash supports for unexpected expenses and other programs. Then we also have our social services block grant, which helps people achieve or maintain economic self-support and reduce dependency, prevents or remedies neglect, abuse, or exploitation of children and adults, and prevents unnecessary institutionalization by providing community-based care. So, for example, with our child welfare and family services, it provides funding for preventive services that help kids remain safely with their families and reduce time in foster care. Also protects them if they're in cases involving child welfare. It helps fund our foster care support services. Also, for adults with mental or physical impairments who cannot manage on their own, it provides funding for that. Funding for services for victims of domestic violence and other protective interventions. And then finally, our child care block grant that is used to help low-income working families pay for child care. Its eligibility is typically at or below federal poverty guidelines, and they receive financial assistance to choose a provider that fits their needs. So, of course, this provides that another aspect of that child care services. We combine that with the TANF funds and the state funds to basically create what John calls a seamless subsidy system for families receiving assistance. So you don't have to be knocking on a whole bunch of doors. You get it all in one place. And so that is what is at risk of going away should this funding be frozen in the long term.
So there are no more details necessarily that you've received or the state's received or you're getting from the state that you know of?
We anticipate there's litigation that's going to commence if it hasn't already. And so at this point, what we do know from the letters that the federal government sent out, they want data proving that there's not widespread fraud by January 20th. Okay. And if they don't get it by then I guess the freeze, my understanding from reading some of it is the freeze is already in effect, at least it's limited. So maybe the freeze becomes more widespread after the 20th. So we're in a position where we have to wait on the state to tell us what's going to happen here, because they're the ones that have the standing to take it to court or to negotiate with the federal government, give them whatever it is that they're looking for. I don't really know how this is going to play out, but it's another worry that we all have to have, not only in government, but the people we serve.
Governor Kathy Hochul has said that New York is prepared to take the administration to court, saying, quote, "We'll fight this with every fiber of our being, because our kids should not be political pawns in a fight that Donald Trump seems to have with blue state governors," end quote. This sounds reminiscent of the SNAP benefits back in the fall, where that put the county and everyone into this state of uncertainty. So you're again in limbo, not really sure how you can move forward.
Yeah, it feels a lot of like a lot of brinksmanship that we come right up to the brink, and sometimes we even teeter right over falling into the abyss, and then we pull back. And it's just not the way we would like to work it at the county. We want to work together on this. As I think the legislature chair, Nadia Rice, said, listen, we have a welfare fraud task force. It's aggressive. It's active. I mean, every quarter I'm putting out a press release with photos of people who we are accusing of having scammed the system. We don't want taxpayers' money to be fraudulently used any more than any other taxpayer does. But the idea of just coming in and saying, well, we're going to freeze funds because we suspect there's widespread fraud, rather than trying to go after the actual fraudsters, rooting it all out. And that's the concern, is that it's the old cliche, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Sullivan County Legislative Chair Nadia Rice said in a statement to Radio Catskill, as you mentioned, like we quote, like we do every day, the federal government should be working to identify fraudsters, not be removing critically needed funding from thousands of innocent children and families. This is clearly a political game of retribution, not a sincere effort to root out fraud and abuse, end quote. And Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger also voiced strong opposition, saying the freeze appeared driven more by politics than evidence. Quote, "The freeze announced by the Trump administration has all the appearance of being politically motivated, since it only targets Democratic-led states. Ironically, most of the New York's counties which administer these funds for their communities are Republican-led and will just be hurt as much by the funding freeze," end quote. So again, starting out the new year with some of these, I guess you mentioned gamesmanship, brinksmanship again from Washington.
And it's disturbing and distressing, and in a way that I think could be handled differently, because we, for years, people recognized, I was a reporter back when people recognized that Sullivan County was seen as a place where you came to get services and there wouldn't be any checks, so fraud abounded. Decades ago, that got changed, and that intent has stayed the same. It's not to allow fraud to permeate the system any more than it already does. So it's very frustrating when you're trying to take that proactive approach and yet you're still told you may lose all your funding for the people who are not engaging in fraud, while we're trying to figure out who has or hasn't done fraud. It doesn't make a lot of sense at a logical, rational level.
After that story aired, we've learned that New York Attorney General Letitia James, along with the five states affected by the freeze, are now suing the Trump administration, saying the move is unconstitutional and the administration has not provided any legitimate justification for halting the funds. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Local Edition on a Friday. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Do you see any checks on your power on the world stage? Is there anything that could stop you if you wanted to?
Yeah, there's one thing. My own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop.
Not international law.
And that's very good. I don't need international law. I'm not looking to hurt people.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. Friday evening, I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. In the first half of the show, we took a look at how Sullivan County is being affected by the federal decision to cut funding for certain services in New York. Now we're turning our focus to Ulster County. And this is a big developing story with a lot of potential impacts on childcare programs and safety net services that many of our neighbors rely on. So to help us understand what this could mean on the ground, including Ellenville, we're joined on the phone with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shawangunk Journal. Chris, thanks for being with us. Let's break it down. What is happening in Ulster County?
It's a big story today. I'm working on it, and we don't know quite how this is going to play out at this point, but the Trump administration announced a freeze on social service program money for New York State, which comes down to a cut for Ulster County taxpayers, and it'd be one for Sullivan as well. I don't know the numbers there, but I got information from the amazing March Gallagher, the county controller, and who notes that in 2024, Ulster County received $13,200,000 in temporary aid to needy families, the infamous TAMFs. That basically keeps some needy families alive. Child care development was like $201,000, and social services block grant was $1,588,000. So Ulster County taxpayers stand to lose almost $15
million, wow,
which is a sizable chunk out of the budget. Now, we don't know how New York State will deal with this, whether New York State was going to get into a tax war with the Trump administration. Remember, New York State contributes an enormous amount of taxes. It's by far the biggest taxpayer of all the states. Well, there's California too, but you know, it's a big one. So they keep that in mind. So it's not like the governor doesn't have any kind of weight on her side, but you know, this is a straight up piece of political vengeance or whatever. I don't know what you want to call it. But so we had a statement from the county executive, Jen Metzger, basically says the freeze announced by the Trump administration has all the appearance of being politically motivated, since it only targets Democratic-led states. And then she makes this point. Ironically, most of New York's counties, which are all upstate, which administer these funds for their communities, are Republican-led and will be just as hurt by a funding freeze. And so she says, if this is over fraud, which is, of course, the sort of thing that the New York Post and Murdoch Media has always gone on about, if there is any fraud anywhere in the administration of these programs in New York, show the evidence so that it can be addressed. And, of course, I do see online people saying, well, there is evidence, and here it is, but it's ignored. Well, in that case, it's time for that to be confronted. Ulster County receives tens of millions of dollars in funding for these programs, which support our residents with everything from emergency housing, food, and utility assistance to child and adult preventive and protective services, domestic violence programs, and senior services. So you can see this is potentially huge. We're right at the beginning of this. And the terrible thing with the Trump administration is they can say one thing on Monday and completely change their minds by Wednesday. So how solid is this? We don't know. But if it's going to continue down this line, then Ulster, Sullivan, Orange are all going to take a huge hit to their budgets. And this is a difficult time because now we're just getting into the process of getting the state budget. And that's why it's being done now, right? I mean, it's designed to be a broadside against the Democrats that control the New York State budget service situation. So anyway, here we go. So the wrestling of giants is going to affect us little mammals in the undergrowth. And one point that I got to get into my little article is, because it was raised online over March Gallagher's statement, is, you know, that, oh my God, well, what about all these immigrants? And, you know, aren't they, you know, getting money for nothing? And basically, undocumented immigrants are ineligible for federal TAMF. If you're an undocumented immigrant, you cannot get temporary assistance for needy families. Right. It's a federally funded program, which is why this can be affected by the Trump administration. It is restricted to citizens and a small category of lawfully present immigrants, and that's it. But, you know, there's all sorts of other things that New York State offers, which is regarded as civilization in some places. But, right, you know, here we go. So that battle has just begun, and we can see the lines drawn up. But of course, we don't know for sure whether Washington will follow through. So it's a little bit vague there.
Yeah. No, they said it's amazing that, you know, we went through the whole thing with the budget thing we had here in New York, and then everything sort of was settled, and now this got thrown into the mix, and it's going to, like, even for Sullivan County, like, so we're working on a story also about how this is affecting Sullivan County. But for us personally, you know, we had a huge budget fight because they were going to raise 9% taxes for the county and brought it down to 2%. But the reason it got brought down to 2% because they did these high projections of potential revenue coming in, which everyone was sort of was afraid of that. Because, like, you know, if we don't make this revenue, we're going to have a huge shortfall for the following budget. And now you throw this into the mix, it's going to be a very tough year for those folks making the budget.
Yeah, they're going to be, you know, what's one sign you'd say something like, well, pencils are going to get worn out. But now, no, now there's just going to be keyboards worn out. You know, I mean, it's going to make a lot of difficulty. The only good thing to say about this on that score is once you bring the attention of people like March Gallagher, you know, really sharp people to take note, you know, at the state level of the budget and whatever, right? They come up with solutions. They know what's in this line and they know how much is over in that line. Mm-hmm. And they're capable of coming up with some fairly interesting things. You know, keep that in mind. That's one of those possibilities that has yet to show itself, but it may do. Yeah. So that is interesting. You know, we'll see. I think this is a story we'll be following a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The aftermath of this, and sort of like I said, if New York is going to step up and sort of provide care. Or not care, which is help those counties and places that are lacking fund. Which, you know, this was also on the heels of yesterday or Monday. Well, I forgot, there was a big announcement with Mondani and Hochul, New York City's mayors, around Mondani and Governor Kathy Hochul on universal child care. They're going to look that to put that into effect starting this year. And then, you know, now I'm wondering now how that will affect, you know, with now the budget cuts coming from the federal government, how that plan will be affected now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. It's something that any advanced country provides. You know, it's astonishing to me that we don't have it in the United States, most prosperous country in the world. I think that's going to be one of those things that's going to spread. And, I cannot see how it's a win for politicians to oppose it.
Right.
How are you going to stump around going, no, we don't want to care for your children? Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you assume that it reaches across the board that whoever your side politically you're on, you have to deal with childcare. Childcare is very difficult. If you don't have like an understanding job or you're in those type of positions that you can't just take off willy nilly. I can't believe I used the word willy-nilly, but can't take off when you want to take care of your child or your child gets sick, things like that. It's very tough.
It is, absolutely. And we all know stories of people who have either had to quit work, which is, well, that's not really good, or who basically depend on a granny or an auntie or an uncle even, and they park the kids somewhere in New Jersey for the day and then rush to the city to get on with their job. Or up here, they park the kids with somebody and they commute to Poughkeepsie or somewhere in Sullivan County or up to Albany, whatever, for their job. That is, in a sense, the only way they can deal with it because they can't afford to pay for full-time childcare, which is very expensive. In other countries, they take it out of general tax fund. And they have a subsidy for childcare, or they have an official program for childcare. You know, I mean, and it's dealt with. But the ultra conservative thing here in this country, as I understand it, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, everyone should stay in their extended families. People shouldn't move abroad. We shouldn't break up. They should be all, you know, granny and grandpa. Everybody, they all should live together in some kind of compound. Women shouldn't go to work. And they should be at home to take care of children. Yeah? Well, no. First of all, women can't trust the men to not move on and leave them. That's always been the pattern. And women want to work. They want jobs. They want their own ability to control money. And good luck taking that away from them. It's irreconcilable. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we're going to be working out over the next decade, I guess. Yeah. So
big fallout from all this. And like I said, you're keeping track, and we're writing stories here about how this is going to affect all of us locally here. So this won't be the last time we talk about this. So, let's talk about what's happening this week. And a lot of board meetings is in the first week is usually a lot of board meetings happening. The reorganizational meetings are going on, and what can you tell us about what's happening in Wawarsing and Ellenville?
Okay, so the two that I cover are Ellenville and Wawarsing. Ellenville actually hasn't had their meeting yet. They'll have that on Monday. But Wawarsing had one on Monday, the previous. And it was interesting to see because after oaths were taken on New Year's Day, Samantha Ellis, who won election to the town board, took her seat on the town board. And at the same time, Joe Steckler moved into the supervisor seat since he defeated Terry Houck. For that, there's a couple of things to say here. One is that Samantha Ellis is the very first person of color or of diversity to sit on that board, which is that's a step forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like there aren't people from the minority in the town. Most of them live in Ellenville, but they are here. So this is not incredible. So there it is. She's there. That'll be interesting to see. Joe Steckler, of course, born here, knows this town backwards, and he will be, I'm sure, completely competent. However, got to say, having covered the town for a while now, it is unusual to have a town board meeting that doesn't have Terry Houck.
Right.
Terry Houck has been on the board or supervisor since 2004. It's a pretty long stretch. It's a little bit of a kind of like, what? Whoa, where is Terry? You know, well, he's gone. Anyway, it goes with our best wishes. And I think he did a pretty good job by his lights, which was always about keeping taxes as low as possible while keeping services as good as possible. And that will be a tough act to follow for Joe Steckler and his now board, which is now completely Democratic.
Yeah.
It's all Democrats. So that's that step. Now, meanwhile, at the village board on Monday, we will see a new board of trustees that will be one, two, three of them will be from the African-American communities. So that's major. They've never been that well represented, but then there's always been Deputy Mayor Ray Younger on that board. He will now be joined by Leticia Kentop and Nilsari Lewis Rivera. And both of those ladies are formidable and have powerful backgrounds. Nilsari is the current athletic director for the town and village. So, that's going to be interesting to see, too. Of course, they inherit a very difficult situation, and they'll be working with Mayor Trent on all those sort of things. But in their favor, they will have a village manager now since Nikki Warner has been hired, and he has professional chops and will be taking over that job. They've got 20 hours a week of him doing the nuts and bolts stuff for the village that, you know, at the moment, it's all being carried by the mayor,
right,
who is not paid even, you know. I mean, he's a hero, Evan Trent. He really has stepped in and done a great job and has kept the village solvent and moving forward. And mind you, it's a high wire. This is really a difficult thing because they have no money and no fund balance. I mean, it's a difficult thing, but they are doing it. And we just have to, well, you know, I just go to the meetings and cover them, but, you know, I'm very interested and concerned with their progress.
Right.
So we welcome Mr. Warner. Okay, so that's those things. There are a number of other things happening there. If you really want to know the details, get the Shongum Journal and take a look at the articles about all that, because there are a number of other little things happening. Like, for instance, a new superintendent of highways Tony Pace Jr. replacing Tony Pace Sr. I'm not going to say any more about that. Tony Pace Jr. is just as competent as Tony Pace Sr. So no, there's not going to be any problems.
Right.
Anyway, next thing we've got to talk briefly about is the issue of the Wawarsing Estates development at the corner of 4455 and Route 209. This is something that came through a long time ago. I'm not sure whether it was 2011, 2012, somewhere like that. It received approvals as a 55 and over, it's got a seniors sort of thing, development for 182 apartments that would arrive with a swimming pool and a clubhouse and some other buildings. And it would, you know, they would take a piece of scrub forest and replace that with this, you know, seven buildings. Now that died, it went away because there wasn't demand. And also the economy was trashed, remember,
right.
You know. While that was all going on, this thing sat in the shadows. And now it has reappeared. A few years ago, they started coming back, and now they're up and coming. And rather than go through the whole planning board process and revisit everything, they went to the town seeking a way through this because they said they had vested investments on the property, which is they put in the basics of the groundwater, the sewer, all those things were in, they placed in the ground. So they invested about $1 million in what they'd done. So with that in mind, the town came up with a local law, which was passed in December, to let them step forward and resuscitate their application and go forward. Now, it's not a completely done deal. They do have to go to the planning board for various tweaks and details, and they have to probably revisit SECA process, but we don't know for sure yet. And that's it. So it is going to continue. But the idea here was to fast track it and get them building, because 182 units, like I guess 142 bedroom apartments and 42 single bedroom apartments, this is a huge boost to the town of Wawarsing's housing and Ulster County housing. So this is something that Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger would applaud. Get it built, get it done. Now, the Nays are concerned about the arrival of another 200, 300 cars and traffic on the highway, because this is an amazing location. It's at the junction of 4455, which goes to New Paltz. It's the junction with 209, which goes down to Ellenville and places further south. And it also goes up north to Kingston. So it's a great place to live if you're going to work in any of those places.
Chris, I guess we have to leave it there. We're running out of time here. We'll talk to Chris Rowley from the Shewanka Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ellenville, Ulster County. We're talking about how the federal freeze is affecting Ulster County. And earlier we heard of how it's affecting Sullivan County. So, Chris, until next week, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you again soon. That does it for the Local Edition. We'll be back again Monday, 10 o'clock starting with Radio Chatskill, and, of course, 6 p.m. starting with the Local Edition. We'll be previewing what's coming up for the New York State of the State, which is happening on Tuesday. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. Before New York Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address Tuesday, live on Radio Catskill, the New York Public News Network's Albany correspondent share what they'll be watching for. I talked to Samuel King Monday night on the Local Edition, and Tuesday morning on Radio Catskill, Tim Bruno will be joined by WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind. The State of the State address marks the start of the budgeting process in Albany, which in turn determines what legislation will ultimately pass this year. And since we all want to know what is and isn't happening in New York's capital, this is a great time to check in with these two Albany reporters. It all starts with pre-speech coverage of the State of the State on the Local Edition with me, Jason Dole, Monday evening at 6 and on Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno, Tuesday morning at 10. Then, special coverage of the State of the State address itself from the New York Public News Network, hosted by David Lombardo, Tuesday afternoon at 1, right here on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Neversink General Store, featuring deli sandwiches, gourmet specials, and catering. TheNeversinkGeneralStore.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.